to 70. He was exhausted from his day of travel and the drive down from Oklahoma City. It had taken longer than he anticipated. There they were again, he thought, those unanticipated circumstances. This time they took the form of a semi and a church bus, not some dumbass deputy cop swimming at the wrong end of the pool. The semi had rammed the church bus on I-35 just north of Ardmore, causing a 10-mile backup and a 90-minute delay. Things at the storage unit had gone more smoothly. He had considered bunking at the unit for the night. He always kept a sleeping bag and MREs, bottled water, and a first aid kit in his storage rental units, wherever he was operating. He also kept $10,000, a SIG 9mm, a taser, an assault rifle, a roll of duct tape, and a change of clothes in a bag, just in case. But he knew that his movements would be on closed-circuit TV. Every self-storage facility he ever used was monitored, and he didn't want to draw unwanted attention by entering a unit at night and failing to leave. Instead, he ate an MRE, which tasted worse than the packaging it came in, washed it down with a bottle of water, loaded up his car with what he had come for, and left. He drove a few miles below the speed limit in Vineland Park because he'd scouted the area and discovered the VPPD was renowned for speed traps. Not even the residents of Vineland Park speeded, not ever. Their money and clout might get them good tickets at cowboy games, but not out of speeding tickets. He was particularly careful because this was one of the few places in the country where his taste in automobiles worked against him. Subcompacts were the exception in Vineland Park, and were as conspicuous as a tarantula in a basket of downy yellow chicks. He didn't care if the cops ran his plates. A car rented to Milton James of Pewaukee, Wisconsin, wouldn't raise any red flags. Even if he was pulled over, he looked like a Milton James. That's why he had chosen the identity. Just another plain face from a faceless place in a cold northern state. The trouble wouldn't be getting pulled over, nor would it come from a cop typing his name into his computer. No, trouble would come only if the cops asked him to pop his trunk. He didn't think he'd have any trouble explaining the old Lee Enfield rifle in the trunk. This was Texas, after all. Texans respected gun rights. They hunted here. And a classic rifle with a scope wouldn't necessarily raise any eyebrows. The three bombs, on the other hand, would be an issue. There would be no explaining those away. If a cop took one step toward the trunk or asked to inspect the car, he would have to be put down. But there was no reason for him to be pulled over, and no reason for him to borrow trouble at this point. And just as he felt himself relax, pulling up to a stop sign, he spotted a VPPD cruiser hidden behind a row of hedges to his right. He made sure his stop was a full one. He counted to three before moving on. He didn't turn to look at the cop as he passed him. He kept his eyes straight ahead and his speed at a steady 20. A block away from the cop, he exhaled. He'd already surveyed the vantage point from which he would spring his surprise and would be out of Vineland Park soon enough. He heard his motel bed calling him. He was another two blocks ahead when he heard something else, a siren. He shrugged his rounded little shoulders. So what? If you listened carefully, you could hear sirens of one sort or another every few minutes. And since the uniformed services in Vineland Park were all cross-trained, a siren around these parts was just as likely to mean a brush fire was burning, or an old millionaire had fallen down and broken his hip as a crime being committed. But then he saw the flashing lights in his rearview mirror. He immediately pulled over, watching the cruiser come flying his way. He reached under the seat, feeling for the butt of the SIG he had taped there at the self-storage warehouse. It hadn't moved, and would be easy enough for him to reach if and when the time came. He heard another siren, and another. When he looked back up out the front windshield, there was another cruiser headed toward him, and a third coming up the street to his left. This wasn't good. One cop, two, he could handle, but it was unlikely he could put down all three before fire was returned. And the cops in Vineland Park weren't slouches, as far as he could tell. Certainly not by reputation. These weren't the Keystone Cops of Paradise, Massachusetts. His shoulder ached, remembering the bullet Luther Simpson had fired into it. He took deep breaths, trying to clear his mind, so that when he made his move, he could do so without hesitation. One bullet each. Tap, tap, tap. Wound them in the gut, then finish them one at a time. Quickly. Headshot, headshot, headshot. He cleared his mind of any idea of failure or of being wounded. As the cruiser rushed up behind him, he forced himself to take another deeper breath. Wait, wait, wait. React, don't act. But the Impala screamed by him, its tires screeching as it swung a hard right. The cruiser that had been racing toward him turned hard left, following the first cruiser. The third cop followed the first two, and their sirens faded quickly into the night, not nearly as loud as they had been when they were coming at him. He pulled away from the curb and continued on his way to his motel. He felt his shirt glued to his back by sweat. About 5 minutes later, he passed Vineland Park Village and saw where all those cops had been headed. He didn't waste time wondering what the trouble was all about. He had one more errand to run in West Dallas, and before surrendering to the song his motel bed was singing to him.